This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
More questions at the border. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka, on this Thursday, June 30th. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
The truck discovered in San Antonio with dozens of dead migrants inside passed through an immigration checkpoint without being inspected. How did that happen?
The U.S. is boosting its military presence in Europe to counter Russia and support NATO allies. We'll have details.
The Fed chair says he's more concerned about taming high prices than raising rates to a point that sends the economy into a recession.
And the lost items being exposed at the bottom of Lake Mead as its water level continues to shrink.
In early May, they found a barrel, a rusted out barrel that had a human body inside of it. So that became a big police investigation still, and they're trying to identify who that might be. And the police suspect that was a mafia related killing from the 70s or 80s based on the clothing that the victim inside the barrel was wearing.
Josh Partlow at the Washington Post on what Lake Mead is revealing, including bodies. How did a tractor trailer with more than 50 dead or dying migrants passed through a federal immigration checkpoint inside the U.S. without being inspected? The 18-wheeler smoothly passed through a federal checkpoint in Encinal, Texas, about 40 miles from the border. But current and former officials tell the New York Times that most drivers pass through without being subjected to a thorough inspection, both because of legal limits on police searches and the sheer volume of truck traffic. Roughly 20,000 trucks pass through the corridor from Laredo to San Antonio every day. Bexar County Sheriff Javier Salazar on ABC News.
We've had some contacts from somebody in Washington that has indicated that they're open to a meeting of some sort. I don't know that it'll be the president himself, but right now I'm just glad to have any amount of dialogue from D.C.
Meanwhile, Texas Governor Greg Abbott, citing the failure of the federal checkpoint, announced that he had ordered the Texas State Police to create their own checkpoints to inspect trucks. The U.S. is making its biggest military expansion in Europe since the Cold War, including its first permanent troop presence in Poland. Washington will add to the 100,000 troops it now has in Europe and deploy more military equipment to NATO allies. The White House says the additions include rotational deployments to Romania and the Baltic region and a permanent Army headquarters base and other units in Poland. Pentagon spokesman John Kirby.
3 months ago, everybody was talking about Javelin anti-tank missiles and Stinger surface-to-air shoulder-fired missiles because that was the need, that was the threat that the Ukrainians were facing from tanks and from aircraft. That's a different fight now, and so we want to make sure that we're staying relevant to the fight.
The new plans also include sending additional Navy destroyers to Spain, a short-range air defense battery to Italy, and two squadrons of cutting-edge F-35 jet fighters to the UK. Until now, the U.S. and other allies have only rotated troops in and out of NATO countries, once under Soviet domination, not permanently located them there. The fall of Roe v. Wade leaves health providers facing a patchwork of standards for reproductive care now that state lawmakers have final say over whether abortions are performed within their borders. It's a story by Arielle Dreyer, healthcare reporter at Axios. Arielle, what are you hearing?
You know, we have states that are considering themselves, if you will, havens for abortion access and care. And basically what I'm hearing from providers and states that are in these positions is that is just going to continue and increase even more so. So in states like Illinois or the West Coast, for example, they're sort of bracing for an influx of patients seeking abortion care. What that also means is for providers that offer abortions in some of these states that are going to ban abortion or already have banned abortion, those providers might be looking to offer abortion care in some of those haven states.
Yeah. And so now you're into like the cross-border stuff, right? And one of the issues you brought up in your story was extradition. What could that mean?
Right. So there's a real, several real legal questions out there that I spoke with some attorneys about that I think some of the healthcare associations, hospital associations are concerned about. And it really has to do with jurisdiction, right? So currently, the Biden administration and several states have sort of reiterated that they believe states really only have jurisdiction of what happens in their borders when it comes to both patients and providers. However, we've seen attempts already in state legislatures. They haven't been successful, but we saw attempts even earlier this year for some states to control what their residents can seek in terms of healthcare outside of their state lines. One example of this is Idaho had a proposal in their state legislature where they were going to prevent patients and parents and guardians from seeking trans-affirming healthcare for their kids outside of state lines. In Missouri, there was a similar attempt to prevent patients from visiting a abortion clinic right across the state line in Illinois. Wow. Those attempts, like I said, weren't successful, but we are expecting to see more of those types of legislation in the coming months and years.
Mm. We're speaking with Arielle Dreher, healthcare reporter at Axios. Her story is called Fractured Post-Roe Landscape Leaves Questions About Cross-Border Care. One of the questions, too, that was raised in your story, where does the regulation stop?
Right. That is the big question that I think at this point will probably play out in courtrooms around the country. Obviously, a state or a regulating authority will have to make a decision that then is challenged in court. But, you know, so far it's been state legislatures that are deciding what limits there are around abortion care and abortion access in their states. The question is, will that political authority sort of extend to some of these medical licensure boards, right? And especially after the pandemic, I think this is a real question, right? Like, we've seen politics and healthcare professionals sort of in an arena that I'm not going to say has never existed before, but it certainly feels different, right?
Yeah.
And so whether or not states are going to decide to regulate or sort of ask their licensure boards to get involved with this is a real question that I think providers, healthcare groups, hospitals, attorneys, and especially providers that work in multiple states are going to be paying attention to.
You spoke to a couple of healthcare groups too, like the American College of OBGYNs and the American Hospital Association. What are they saying with regards to all this?
Right. So the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists really agrees with what the Biden administration has said in that, you know, powers don't extend beyond state borders. States can sort of say, this is what's allowed here in our state for patients and providers alike, but cannot sort of say, hey, residents, you can't go across the state lines to get a procedure. The American Hospital Association has not necessarily come out and said those exact things, but they are watching and are concerned about a lot of the practical impacts of this and how care is provided. The Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act, for example, is a federal law that applies to hospitals who treat medical emergencies. And I think there's a real question there in terms of when a patient presents with a high risk or risky pregnancy in the emergency room, what's happening inside that emergency room. And I think, you know, having consistency across care settings across the country is a real question when it comes to a large association like the American Hospital Association that represents hospitals all over.
Thanks, Arielle. Arielle Dreher, healthcare reporter at Axios. Dell's Black Friday in July sale is here. Power productivity with a tech refresh, now with up to 45% off top-rated laptops like the XPS, along with our special deals on business desktops with Intel Core processors. Get big savings on the latest servers, storage, monitors, and more with free shipping and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Upgrade today by calling 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Thanks for spending time with us. If you've missed anything, be sure to check out a podcast of today's show. You can find it on our app. The app is called This Morning with Gordon Deal. You can also find the podcast on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. The Congressional Committee probing the riot at the Capitol has subpoenaed the former White House counsel to President Trump to testify about Mr. Trump's activities on the day of the melee 15 months ago. The subpoena seeking a deposition from Pat Cipollone followed public testimony Tuesday from a former White House aide who said the president wanted to leave the rally for the Capitol and that he grabbed the steering wheel of the armored presidential SUV when he learned that the Secret Service would not drive him there when some supporters were armed. But the committee faced questions yesterday about what steps it had taken to corroborate the account of Cassidy Hutchinson. Ohio Republican Congressman Jim Jordan on Fox News.
We are not going to get the truth, particularly when there's no chance to cross-examine and no chance to see the documents. I mean, think about all the lies we've caught them in, and that's without having any access to the transcripts of the depositions.
Multiple media outlets said agents were prepared to challenge some of Ms. Hutchinson's testimony. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell says policymakers will not allow inflation to take hold of the U.S. economy over the longer term. Speaking to European Central Bank Forum yesterday, along with three of his global counterparts, Powell said policymakers are focused on arresting inflation so it doesn't become entrenched and create a self-fulfilling cycle.
We are committed to and will succeed in getting inflation down to 2%. The process is likely, highly likely, to involve some pain, but the worst pain would be from failing to address this high inflation and allowing it to become persistent.
Since the Fed started raising rates in March, market indicators of inflation expectations have fallen considerably.
Number two.
The Supreme Court has ruled 5-4 that Oklahoma can prosecute non-Native Americans in Indian country, clawing back part of its 2020 decision, recognizing nearly half of the state as a reservation. The case renews a sharp divide on the court over the U.S. treatment of Native American tribes and its legal repercussions today. The majority opinion by Justice Brett Kavanaugh took a limited view of the sovereignty the tribes retain in the 21st century, while the dissent by Justice Neil Gorsuch recounted centuries of broken promises to Native Americans, asserting that the court should today enforce long-ignored treaties.
Number three.
A New York federal judge has sentenced R&B singer R. Kelly to 30 years in prison for racketeering and sex abuse offenses. Kelly was convicted last year of using his inner circle to recruit women and underage girls for sex. U.S. Attorney Breon Peace.
This is a significant outcome for all victims of R. Kelly, and especially for the survivors who so bravely testified about the horrific and sadistic abuse they endured.
Prosecutors allege Kelly for decades used his fame, fortune, and entourage to sexually abuse and exploit victims, including the late singer Aaliyah when she was a teenager. We are not in a very good mood with the slog of the second year of COVID proving as distressing as the shock of the first. A Gallup poll of 127,000 adults in 122 countries found us slightly sadder, more worried, and more stressed out last year than we were in 2020. 42% said they experienced a lot of worry or stress. 31% said they experienced physical pain. 28% experienced sadness and 23% anger. The unhappiness was tied to the lack of well-being at work, COVID-induced loneliness, and global hunger.
My goodness. 31% said they experienced physical pain.
Yeah.
As you said, we were more banged up than we thought.
Yes.
That is, wow. Thank you, Jen. With its more than 1 billion monthly active users, TikTok has emerged as a darling of Madison Avenue, impressing big and small brands with its strong hold over Gen Z, millennials, and influencers. If you're a marketer, you ignore the video sharing app at your own risk. Analysis from Adam Raziri, co-founder of Agency Partner Interactive, a digital marketing firm in Dallas. Adam, how do you see it?
Yeah, you really have to know where your customers are and obviously be present when they want you to be present, right? And a lot of these Gen Zs, millennials, and influencers alike are spending just a compelling amount of time on TikTok. And you think about just how much time are they spending on TikTok? I mean, in 2022, we're seeing the average user spending something like almost 29 hours per month on TikTok, which is quite a bit different than what you see from engagement on Facebook and Instagram. You know, on Facebook, you're seeing something like 16 hours a month, which is still quite a bit. But then on Instagram, 8 hours per month spent on that particular platform. So, you know, you're seeing TikTok growing in a tremendous way. You know that between Facebook and Instagram, you know, it's almost 5 billion users. about 2.9 billion users on Facebook and two on Instagram versus TikTok's measure that's somewhere around a billion users.
Wow.
So it's really the time on the platform that's quite a bit different. And so as an advertiser, you're just like, well, if this is where they're spending their time, that's where I need to be. But, you know, brands, they really do have to be conscious and considerate about where they spend their time when it comes to marketing and advertising. It's certainly expensive to do that if you do it the wrong way. So, you know, just because a lot of people are on TikTok and just because a lot of people are spending their time there, it doesn't necessarily mean that that's where your company has to be, mm-hmm. right? You really have to analyze your audience. You got to assess your brand identity and just decide if this is worth investing time into.
Yeah.
And that's just from the business side of things too, right? Like, I always advise companies to do everything they can to collect their own data, to build their own marketing database. Because let's not forget, TikTok is owned by ByteDance, which is owned by China. And you really never know what's going to happen in the world of regulation, right? And things change so fast in the social media world as is. So, you know, I'm always just like, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Make really conscious and considerate decisions that mitigate risk.
What is it about TikTok in your mind? I mean, because they're, I think, anticipating $12 billion in advertising right. revenue.
Yeah, I mean, they're $12 billion in 2022. And that's growth from 2021, which was about $4 billion. What's their secret, Gordon? What's their secret, right? It's that algorithm. I mean, their algorithm is so effective when it comes to recommending, you know, content that you want to see. Before you even know you want to see the content, TikTok knows, right? So it's like, you're like, how does TikTok know me better than I know myself? And it's just they measure your patterns of behavior across multiple online experiences. You know, they're watching you when you're not just on TikTok, but when you're just browsing the web and you're just living your life, right? They analyze all those different patterns of behavior. And so, yeah, maybe they do know us better than we know ourselves.
Thanks, Adam. Adam Ruzzieri, co-founder of Agency Partner Interactive, a digital marketing firm in Dallas. Don't forget, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can follow us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. You could follow me directly on Twitter at Gordon Deal. It is 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Want to eat healthier, but every supplement you've ever tried seems like the better it is for you, the worse it tastes? Then you have to try AG1 from Athletic Greens. I started taking AG1 because I wanted more energy and better gut health. What I didn't expect, the taste is better than any supplement I've ever had. I drink it, like it says, before anything else when I wake up. I guzzle those 8 to 10 ounces before my coffee and start my day knowing I've already gotten the recommended daily intake of all the good fruits and veggies. There's definitely a mental boost knowing you've started the day off on the right foot. I tackle the day now with more confidence and energy. AG1, by the way, is not only lifestyle friendly, it's cheaper than getting all the different supplements yourself. Try AG1. I love this product. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/Gordon to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. athleticgreens.com/Gordon.
Bringing the world to your door every morning. This is America's First News, This Morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Hey, thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Thursday, June 30th. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. The U.S. is expanding its military presence in Europe to counter Russia. A woman pushing her baby in a stroller was fatally shot in New York City. Singer R. Kelly sentenced to 30 years in prison for things like sex trafficking. 20 men convicted in connection with the 2015 ISIS terror attacks in Paris. Final day on the Supreme Court for Justice Stephen Breyer, who will be replaced immediately by Ketanji Brown Jackson today. Stocks closed mostly lower, and the Stanley Cup delivered to the wrong address. That story in about 20 minutes. This portion of the program is brought to you by Dell. Dell's Black Friday in July sale is here with savings on top-rated business computers with Intel Core processors. Upgrade today by calling 877-ASK-DELL. Public figures across the U.S. are facing escalating harassment and threats of violence At a time of deep political divisions and coarsened public debate, they say an undercurrent of anxiety courses through their work lives and often spills into their personal lives. Some are resigning as a result, while others are receiving enhanced security. Examples from Alicia Caldwell, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Alicia, what's going on?
Unfortunately for public officials, we're seeing sort of an expansion of targeted threats of violence and other harassment, primarily online. You know, it's gone from the days of showing up at the school board meeting to voice your concerns however loudly one chooses, to go into these folks' homes and finding them online and, in some cases, as I said, you know, issuing threats of violence toward them, their families, their compatriots on boards and such, if you don't like their ruling or their opinion or their stand on something.
Why is this growing?
That's a good question. Social media has created a little bit of an equal playing field for someone to gain access to someone else, right? You can post on Twitter or Facebook or what have you. Primarily, we see historically threats and acts of violence against public officials, really in the context of, again, those top officials, presidents and such, in times of sort of social upheaval. You know, it's hard to know exactly why now, but social media is thought to be a contributing factor.
We're speaking with Alicia Caldwell, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Her story is called Threats of Violence Reach More Public Officials. Anybody suggest a way to address it in order to tamp things down?
Not specifically, other than, you know, encouraging social media companies in particular to act more swiftly on accounts that are used to sort of dox people, which is, you know, release public information or release information rather about where a public official lives.
Yeah.
You know, someone goes online and releases your home phone number, your address, where your kids go to school, every bit of information they can find about you, giving others an opportunity to protest at your house, find your kids at school, and so on. And we've seen this, you know, growing over the years, right? Like cabinet members accosted or encountered at restaurants or at other public spaces by protesters who, you know, take their message directly to them in these public spaces. And again, you know, going to these folks' homes and such. So the real push is to get social media companies to act more swiftly.
What were some of the more extreme examples of, say, threats that you heard about?
Well, a state senator in California, Scott Wiener, most recently got a very specific threat that there were bombs outside his home and his office. So police, of course, got involved. They did not find any explosives, but, you know, that's pretty terrifying. And he tells me that, you know, on the routine, he is receiving death threats. They report every single one, but he's also, you know, called all kinds of despicable names online and accused of all kinds of different things. He's an advocate for the LGBTQ community and the HIV positive community, and he feels like that advocacy has really helped propel some of this vitriol against him. As he describes, he's, you know, a Jewish gay man and advocating for these populations, and that puts a target on him. So far, nothing has been, you know, done in terms of physical violence. He's, of course, worried that it will evolve to that. And the experts I talked to said, you know, there is that worry, right, that what's out there online, these machinations of complaints and threats and such, that someone will take that to the next level and turn it to, you know, in the real world, if you will.
Bulletproof glass is becoming popular in some areas.
It is. You know, it's, again, we've seen, unfortunately, incidents of violence against public officials. You know, it's not confined to one party or the other, but there is, you know, this growing tension that folks are getting more sort of emboldened and becoming more violent.
Thanks, Alicia. Alicia Caldwell, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Quick reminder, if you've missed anything, check out a podcast of today's show. It's available every day on the This Morning with Gordon Deal app, plus Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. The shrinking of Lake Mead is exposing a wide range of wreckage, even bodies. Handguns, baby strollers, vintage Coors cans, exploded ordnance, and other artifacts are stoking the imagination of those watching the nation's largest reservoir shrink to about a quarter of its former size. Josh Partlow, national reporter at the Washington Post, paid a visit. Josh, start with the importance of Lake Mead.
I mean, it's crucial to a lot of people. Like you said, it's the largest reservoir in the country, formed on the Colorado River. It provides water to about 25 million people and electricity to hundreds of thousands from the Hoover Dam. So it's it's central to, you know, in the states of California, Nevada, Arizona, places like that.
So as the water level drops, things start to get exposed that have been near the bottom of some parts of the lake. What's Lake Mead revealing?
Well, yeah, I mean, the big headliner is last month in early May, they found a barrel, a rusted out barrel that had a human body inside of it. And this was right next to the one remaining boat launch that's functional. There used to be 10 or so boat launches, about 1,000 boaters a day would be out there on the lake. And now there's only one left, two lanes. It takes people hours, the people who still want to do it. So right next to where the boats go in the water, someone stumbled across this barrel that had been corroded enough that they could see that there was human remains in it. So that became a big police investigation still, and they're trying to identify who that might be, and they police suspect that was a mafia related killing from the 70s or 80s based on the clothing that the victim inside the barrel was wearing. But subsequent to that, you know, another group of sisters who were out paddleboarding in a different part of the lake found some human remains that authorities think was somebody who drowned in the lake. And then, you know, and people have told me when I was asking around, all sorts of other stuff, handguns, people throw guns in the lake, and then the lake drops and those get revealed.
Wow. We're speaking with Josh Partlow, national reporter at The Washington Post. His piece is called "Where There's Bodies, There's Treasure, A Hunt as Lake Mead Shrinks." So you mentioned the one barrel that was recovered, but it's not the only one folks are looking for, correct?
Yeah, that's right. We came across some people out there who were out bass fishing, but also, you know, we're convinced from the gossip network down at the marina that there were other barrels filled with treasure. And so they were going out to see what they could see. And it's actually not that hard to find other barrels. I saw a few just in the parts of the lake that I went. So, I mean, I didn't try to open them or anything, but they're in the mud. And so, yeah, I guess there was an old concrete aggregate plant that's now submerged that they used to build the Hoover Dam back in the 30s. And that, people say there are also barrels associated with that.
Goodness. I imagine, I guess, as the days and weeks go by, more stuff is just being revealed. But you referenced the mud, and then it's almost like a cottage business in and of itself, perhaps, of volunteers who are pulling people out of the mud who are driving there thinking that they can get closer.
Yeah, it was amazing. I was really shocked by that. I mean, it is. I took a few steps into the water just to see what it was like, and it felt like almost a quicksand. I mean, I almost lost my sandals. It's just this really sucking thick mud, and so it's so hot down there too. It was about 110 one of the days I was at the lake, and so that there is this crust that forms on the surface, but then underneath it's just this, still this mud. So people drive, you have to drive so much further now to access the water, so if you want to put in a kayak or a paddleboard or something.
Thanks, Josh. Josh Partlow, national reporter at the Washington Post. Dell's Black Friday in July sale is here. Power productivity with a tech refresh, now with up to 45% off top-rated laptops like the XPS, along with our special deals on business desktops with Intel Core processors. Get big savings on the latest servers, storage, monitors, and more with free shipping and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Upgrade today by calling 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Thanks for spending time with us, and welcome into Thursday. 9 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know.
Number one.
The U.S. will make its biggest military expansion in Europe since the Cold War, including its first permanent troop presence in Poland, as NATO prepares for Sweden and Finland to join the alliance in response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The announcement follows a NATO pledge this week to increase its high readiness forces, Pentagon spokesman John Kirby.
These are advanced militaries that we're comfortable working with, very interoperable. They will lend incredible defensive capabilities to the alliance.
Meanwhile, Secretary of State Antony Blinken says the U.S. has not seen meaningful Russian diplomacy in ending the war in Ukraine.
Number two.
President Biden met with the heads of Japan and South Korea, the first such gathering between the three countries' leaders in nearly 5 years, and pledged deeper cooperation to counter North Korea's weapons provocations. The Wednesday meeting on the sidelines of the NATO summit in Madrid was another example of increased coordination between Washington and two of its key Asian allies. Tokyo-Seoul relations are on a tentative recovery path after deteriorating in recent years over historical grievances and trade disputes.
Number three.
The House committee investigating the attack on the Capitol has subpoenaed former White House counsel Pat Cipollone, seeking information regarding concerns he raised about then-President Trump's action related to the January 6, 2021 riot. The subpoena came a day after former White House aide Cassidy Hutchinson said Cipollone had warned of legal dangers if Trump marched to the Capitol and had tried to get Trump to call off the mob after the riot started. Committee Vice Chair Liz Cheney.
Her superiors, men many years older, a number of them are hiding behind executive privilege, anonymity, and intimidation.
While Cipollone has spoken informally with the committee, he has not testified under oath. The chip shortage and supply chain crisis are doing more than just driving up vehicle prices. They're also affecting quality. J.D. Power's initial quality study for 2022 model year cars found new vehicle quality dropped 11% from a year ago, the steepest drop ever recorded by the group. Electric vehicle manufacturers, in particular, are showing big drops in quality, with Polestar ranking dead last and Tesla ranking seventh from the bottom. J.D. Power recorded 226 problems per 100 Tesla vehicles, ranking high in quality: Buick, Dodge, Chevrolet, Genesis, and Kia.
Wow. New vehicle quality dropped 11%.
Pretty bad.
Not kidding. Thank you, Jen. Thanks for being with us. It's tradition for every member of a Stanley Cup winning team to spend a day with the revered trophy. But the Cup made an unscheduled stop the day after the Colorado Avalanche defeated the Tampa Bay Lightning to finish the series in six games. 9newsnow.com says Dmitry Rudenko and his husband, Kit Karbler, were at their home in Denver's Hilltop neighborhood when Mr. Rudenko noticed someone pulling into their driveway that evening. The keepers of the Stanley Cup told Mr. Karbler they were on their way to team captain Gabe Landeskog's house.
I live in a very modest mid-century home that is surrounded by larger $2 to $4 million homes. And my house is not one of those. So they must have realized it at some point.
Nonetheless, the keepers of the cup let the two men pick it up, snap a selfie with it. Mr. Rudenko said having the cup in the driveway was like finding a treasure. By the way, the Avs Stanley Cup Championship Parade is today, set to begin at 10 a.m. and end with a rally at Civic Center Park. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.